Welcome to the Extra Sequential, episode 11. This is the latest in a weekly podcast, free, coming from Perth in Western Australia.
Where we talk about comics, graphic novels and manga.
Yes, we are.
Oh, fine. Don't tell me off for technical things, Chris.
My co-host, Maladdin, and we are joined by a very special guest.
Very special.
This morning.
Care to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Johnny. I've been in the old comic selling business for a fair while and been a fan of all these sort of things, and I thought I'd come in and tell you a little bit about a few of the cooler things that I've been checking out in the last couple of weeks.
Nice.
Sounds good.
What are we going to talk about today,
Thank
Chris?
Thank you for joining us, Johnny. We are going to talk about, well, first we're going to mention a whole bunch of news, nice. Various film and TV related issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about what we've been reading, which is a stack of stuff from me, like Superior and various other things.
Yep.
And then we're going to also talk about a relatively new trade paperback, or original graphic novel rather, called 45.
Yes.
From English publisher ComX.
And we're going to force Johnny to maybe flick through it while we're talking about it.
You have 12 seconds to catch up. Well, let's get straight to the news, shall we?
I think we should.
Okay, well, first off, there's something that you let me know about, Maladdin. You're a big Christopher Nolan
I'll take
fan.
Credit for that.
Tom Hardy.
Yes, of Star Trek Nemesis and some film called Inception.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people forget he was in Star Trek Nemesis. He played Captain Picard's clone.
That was a terrible movie. Did you ever see that one, Johnny?
I'm not a huge Star Trek fan. I know it's kind of almost blasphemy in the job that I have to not watch Star Trek and things like that.
I wouldn't say I'm a Star Trek fan either.
Did you watch the remake?
I watched the remake and I thought cool. That was enjoyable. Yeah. And I know enough about Star Trek to kind of get a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the hand gestures and whatnot.
You know which one's Captain Kirk and which one's Captain Picard. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Yep. Seen on t-shirts.
You know your hero is a girl.
Yeah.
Right.
What more is there?
And Tom Hardy played What's-His-Face in Inception, the kind of muscular, handsome guy.
Yes, John What's-His-Face, I believe was his official cast name. But yeah, he was one of the thief kind of guys. He's an English actor. He was also in, he plays a...
it's going to be some serious movie.
He's been in some films. He was in Inception, and obviously we know Christopher Nolan, who directed Inception, mm-hmm. is also making the third Batman film, which I think starts shooting next year.
That seems likely.
Shall
we discuss the rumour mill?
Yeah, we don't know who he's playing.
Yeah.
Fling rumours.
Now, I know they're filming on location in New Orleans.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
Is that all one word?
Yes. People have been throwing around the idea of Killer Croc, perhaps, in this film.
Ah, okay.
Maybe as some sort of freak character, less of a giant monster crocodile.
I don't know if that would fit in the kind of world that Nolan's established in the first two films, though.
Unless they made him completely different and didn't make him a monster, just made him sort of a character that he called himself Killer Croc.
Yeah. Some guy with a skin condition or something.
Or not even that, you know. It could just be something.
Yeah,
like,
that's
some larger-than-life character.
Yeah. Maybe because he wears leather suits, like crocodile leather suits.
Could be something like that.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's thinking laterally,
Nice. Yeah. It could be the Riddler, maybe. He's kind of street-level.
Yeah. He's a bit muscular and handsome for the Riddler, though, isn't he?
True.
People want Joe Gordon-Levitt to do the Riddler.
Yeah.
Remember the skinny guy? Yeah.
That would be quite good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Tom Hardy could play Batman. I'm sick of hearing of Christian Bale's Batman voice.
Yeah. I just watched Smallville season 10, actually. The last half of the whole season was awesome, because they had a few episodes written by Geoff Johns. Justice Society of America turned up, so Dr. Fate, Hawkman, and Stargirl. And Hawkman, who was one of the guys from... Michael Shanks, actually, the actor who was in the Stargate TV series.
Wow.
He played Hawkman, and whenever he put on the Hawkman costume, he'd talk like this. I'm going to teach you a generation of heroes what it really means. And it's just annoying. It's like, why?
Wait, who was he in Stargate?
He was the guy that the Boston Legal guy played in the film.
Oh,
Daniel
so
Jackson.
James Spader's equivalent.
Yes,
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I like him.
I don't know the Stargate TV series, but...
Sure you don't.
I'm aware of it.
Whatever.
You
know who Teal'c is.
Is he the muscular guy with the tattoo on his head?
Yes, he is.
Cool. Reese Ifans, I don't know how you say his name.
Reese
the guy
Ifiano.
In his underwear from Notting Hill. I'm sure you remember that, Maladdin.
He was also in a deck chair, and his name was Danny, wasn't he?
Yes. And he balloons took him.
They took him!
I'll get you balloons. He's playing the Lizard in the Spider-Man reboot, which we talked about last week. So the Spider-Man film, I think, is coming out in a year or two. So it's got nothing to do with Sam Raimi, nothing to do with Tobey Maguire or Kirsten Dunst. Just forget about them. Forget all you know about Spider-Man on the big screen. Done?
Yep.
Okay.
So if you have the memory of a goldfish, no worries.
So Rhys Ifans, English tall lanky guy, he's in the boat that rocked as well. He's playing, yeah, the lizard. The lizard was set up in the first two films. The Kurt Connors, the guy with one arm.
It's funny that they're not continuing on with the actor that they...
Well, I think they just want an entirely separation from the original film. So they're going back to high school and it's going to be based on more of the Ultimate Spider-Man comics.
Okay. Well, it's probably a good direction for them, I think. But the original films were pretty much like a hybrid between the... Ultimate and that sort of classic.
That's true.
Universe.
That's true. I mean, the first one was all set in high school, wasn't it? But yeah, I know this reboot has Gwen Stacy in it rather than Mary Jane. So I guess, yeah, I don't know.
Is he set up in the previous films?
Kurt Connors appeared in all three films. I forget the actor's name. Dylan,
who did he play?
Someone. Like, he was the professor. So he was his high school teacher and then professor. He had like one arm.
Was that like a fan service thing? Like everyone was like, it's that guy!
Yeah, he's eventually going to be turned into the lizard, but obviously it never came to pass. But
did the guy with the vulture or whatever appear at all?
The vulture? No.
Was he selling pizzas with Tobey Maguire?
Not that I'm
aware
of. And
then winks at the camera like, in Spider-Man 4, I'll see you there! Like,
no.
Unfortunately. Are you guys going to see this film when it comes out?
I am, because I'm curious.
Yep. Well, you own Catwoman on DVD, don't you?
I do not. Just
that's
the costume.
That's a rumour.
Okay. I'm moving right along. Let's move into TV land. Hulk, Cloak and Dagger, and Scalped are all possible.
These things have in common?
Yeah. They're all comics that are becoming TV series. Possibly Hulk on TV. Apparently he's by the ABC Family Channel, so I don't know how that's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
The same with Cloak and Dagger, and I believe Cloak and Dagger were like two street kids who... got experimented with like some form of heroin and then got superpowers. I don't know how that's going to become.
I always mix them up with Hawk and Dove.
Yeah. Dagger is like the white girl who throws the daggers of light. Cloak is the African American guy who has a big
cloak.
Yeah.
Which kind of is like reality bending or something.
Something like that.
I do remember them from New Mutants at some point.
Yeah, they're Marvel characters.
Yeah.
And they're very minor as well, so I'm wondering why they're picking that, because the first time I ever heard about it was I read one of the like Runaways series, and they happened to be side characters.
Oh,
in that.
I remember that. Yeah.
So they were in that, and because they were similar sort of characters to the Runaway characters.
Yeah.
And then now they're being spin off into their own TV series, which I mean, I guess you've kind of got, you know, it's good because the people who know them will know them, but it won't be too confronting for like a new audience, I guess.
I guess because their powers aren't very. He wears a cloak, and her deal. I mean, she could be dressed in white and normal looking, so they figured these are the ones which don't have to be wearing zany outfits and might not be as off-putting as you said. For
I mean, it could be Marvel's take on Smallville, where it's like teen heroes and you could have guest stars coming in, and who knows.
Do we need another Smallville?
No,
sorry to Tom Welling and Kristen Kruick or whatever.
No, she's not really in it anymore.
And the third one you mentioned was
Scout, which you're probably more familiar with than I am. But
Jason Aaron's been writing a column for CBR, basically about writing
comicbookresources.com.
Of course, thank you. And he mentioned that he was interviewing actors to for a possible Scalped TV show. What they do before a show's in development, they'll try and get some actors signed on, so it's more of a desirable pitch for the TV studios.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's not certain whether it'll happen, but he was he's meeting with Native American actors, which is kind of cool. It's not going to be Pierce Brosnan in like makeup like that like that movie. You know the one I mean.
Yeah. So Scalped is about, it's a Vertigo series. It's still going. And it's kind of what made Jason Aaron's name as a writer before he went to write, he's writing Wolverine and Ghost Rider for Marvel. So it's about, some kind of Native American guy who goes back to his reservation and kind of cleans up the place or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, I think he's some sort of FBI agent now. And
Okay.
Yeah. Have you read it at all, Johnny?
I've had a bit of a flick through, and it seems to be one of the more interesting Vertigo titles.
Yeah.
But still ongoing. So.
I think it's their lead crime title right now, anyway.
And interesting because it's not really like, you know, a throwback noir title that the Vertigo have got now. It's kind of modern day.
It could be a good HBO kind of series, something dark and gritty.
Yeah, again, with these sort of series, especially Vertigo things, they need to be done in an environment that will support the full context of the story.
Yes.
If you start dumbing it down, or you start, you know, sanitizing some of these stories that aren't really supposed to be sanitized, they're adult stories.
Yeah.
And that's when you're really going to fall flat.
Let the company who's doing Breaking Bad do it. I think that's AMC.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, AMC are doing the Walking Dead series.
Oh, are they? Oh,
yeah,
good.
So that fills me with a bit of confidence. So.
Yeah, cool. And they shoot a lot on location, and this title seems to scream for a lot of location shooting. Although that killed shows like Carnivale and Deadwood, so...
Ba-bomb.
Two seasons, and then back to Two and a Half Men.
No, thank you. Lastly, and this is a bit of news that's self-indulgent, but I don't care because I'm the one holding the microphone.
This is a mind-blowing piece of news, everyone.
Thank you, Milan. Yep. You're, yeah.
Step right up.
So Extra Sequential was a magazine before it became a podcast. Myself and a cohort from my workplace, we released three issues of a magazine called Extra Sequential last year online. We had two different deals with two different publishers to move us into print. And they both fell apart, but I don't want to talk about it. It breaks my heart.
You brought it up, man.
Yeah. I just want to mention it. I don't want to talk about it. So we've just released the very last issue of Extra Sequential, which is a free magazine. So we've got... So these are all the articles and interviews that were scheduled for print. So we've got an interview with Claudio Sanchez from the band Coheed and Cambria. We've got about his comic. We've got an interview with Matt Fraction in there, Mike Diodato Jr., talk with a couple of guys, new projects from Comics, who we'll be talking about later. So, yeah, we like it. So it's not completely perfect and polished, but it's up online. You can find it at extrasequential.com or ISSW.com or Scribd.
We should get .com David on the show.
Extra Sequential. Please read it.
Sorry.
It's free. Yeah, we should.
Yeah, he was Chris's cohort that he mentioned.
Created the magazine. So, yeah, it was good times. But anyway, so now you have my full attention.
Yeah.
My dreams have been crushed. Say what you That is the news for this week, the 18th of October.
Now I'll be talking about what we've been reading.
Yeah.
I'll just open it up because I haven't been reading too much this week. I had a flick through.
Why? What have you been doing?
Don't tell me what to do.
I'm not telling you what to do. I'm questioning what you have been doing.
I've been watching, finishing watching Carnivale.
The second season?
Yep, second season.
Did it actually have a definite end?
No. It's clear they didn't know they were going to get cancelled up until the editing stages, you know.
Oh, okay.
But it's very open-ended and...
Can you look online and see how it would have ended?
That's the weird thing. Straight after it finished, the creators felt bad to the fans and stuff. Like, fans may have a huge petition and nothing happened. But and then a couple of months later, the creators came out and said, okay, this is what would have happened.
Oh, okay.
Jonesy
cool.
survives. That's important to me because I'm like, Jonesy, no!
Well,
if you haven't seen the show, that's meaningless
to
you.
But okay.
But, that's why I haven't had too much time to read through these manga. It's not like I can read them because they are in Japanese.
So you and your lovely partner went to Japan, last year or something?
Yeah, it would have been last year around, August or something.
And you went to, because they have like manga districts and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, but these are just from news agents anyway.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, basically news agents will
have... You see them everywhere anyway.
Yeah, well, this is the kind of stuff. Like, the stores, like in the manga districts, will sell your more manga-ish looking digests that you're used to seeing. And then news agents sell these huge magazine tomes.
Yeah, there seems to be like cheaper paper kind of...
Yep, it's kind of like on newsprint paper.
Yeah, it looks like half the size of a phone book.
Yeah, basically, that one is about the size of a phone book.
So this would be read right to left?
Right to left, and the content page is at the very end. So I guess
it's got an ad for Tommy Lee Jones advertising some kind of coffee product.
Yeah, those were around everywhere in Japan, and he just looks so grumpy and ugly.
He doesn't look grumpy, wow.
So I hate coffee.
Maybe it's the before coffee and after coffee. You should see me before I've had coffee.
Ah, right.
It's not pretty.
I should have looked at the back of the coffee machine to see the other picture of Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah.
So these are like anthologies. They're not like trade paperback.
It's kind of, basically a Judge Dredd format. So there'll be continuing stories which continue every whatever. I think these are bi-weekly or monthly. I've got this one, Monthly Shonen Champion by Akita Shoten. That's the big one here. I think it's 600 pages, and it's a blend of... You've got action stories, you've got kind of, I guess, medieval Japanese stories. You've got... There's one awesome one, which is like a table tennis championship.
Okay.
And he fights this huge, muscly guy.
Yeah.
And he's holding this little paddle, and his muscles are rippling, and, you know, veins sticky. He's like, I'll just dry you! I assume that's what he's saying, but the words are being screamed.
I was going to ask, does any of this make sense?
No, you can follow it. I mean, a lot of it's action, so it's, fairly easy. There's a baseball story in there. Yeah, a range of sports, actually.
Something for everyone.
There's a few gratuitous kind of up-the-skirt shots in some sort of girl high school scenario.
Wow.
Yeah, Johnny's just having...
Bathing suits everywhere and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. I've noticed, they focus on up-the-skirt shots a lot.
Wow.
Whereas in American comics, the gratuitous scenes are usually button boobs.
Yeah.
Usually with a twisting back.
Yeah.
But I wanted you guys to... I've probably mentioned it to Johnny already, but I want Chris to guess how much a 600-page comic is.
The one that Johnny is looking at? Yeah, so black and white, cheap paper. Oh, wow, he is muscular.
Yeah. Yes, it's great.
It's like the paddle, the ping pong paddle, whatever it's called. Yeah. It's like the size of his nose. Oh, it looks like a tree trunk with arms. I would say that would be $16.40.
Take off $10, basically. So it was $6, wow. That one. And the other one there, which is 400 pages, is about $4. So yeah, you awesome. Are paying about a dollar per 100 pages of comic.
I suppose the closest would be Marvel do the essential editions, where it's just black and white reprints of, like, you know, the first 20 issues of Wolverine or whatever. Yeah. And it's in black and white and it's colour, and they're usually quite cheap as well. But,
yeah, but they're nowhere near that cheap, yeah.
No.
I just thought this was interesting compared to the recent price changes of Marvel and DC.
Yes,
and
how by a dollar.
They dropped pages because they couldn't handle printing, you know, a $3 comic.
Well, I suppose, if these are in every newsagent or whatever in Japan, they must be printing thousands or millions of
for
these
sure.
things.
And I have a feeling they probably try and recycle the paper and cut all the costs as much as they can. I thought it was interesting how it is black and white, but they do, like, they change the pages of the colours of the pages through the book, so you can quickly flick through and find what you're up to. So I was thinking, couldn't we apply this to Western comics in some way?
I think we could.
Especially with new titles, which aren't really likely to sell a lot of actual floppy issues.
Yeah.
And anthology format's really the best setting for that to give artists a go.
Mark Miller's trying to do that with his sort of ongoing magazine, which is called Clint.
Mm. Yes.
And there's a lot of different... I think it's a lot of his mates, basically, that he's getting along to do all these bits and pieces. Mm. And I think that's the sort of thing he's trying to do. And there is also, you know, the tradition of the 2000 ADs and all that sort of, you know... It's sort of a very UK sort of thing to have these big anthologies where things... And then eventually they will get collected into books and stuff. But I think the problem with American comics is the production values, and those are a lot more... You know, much more involved than your average manga. I mean, that's just, you know, some of them just a bit of shading. It's all black and white. They can churn those out really quickly. But, you know, if you think about it, they will have to be, all the American ones have to be digitally painted, have to be probably printed, you know, full color printing.
They've worked themselves into a corner with the quality of the book.
Exactly. If they keep escalating this quality, they have to then, you know, have pass on the costs as go along. And yeah, there's just been a gradual increase in each of the individual issue prices, and you're seeing a drop in those. So.
Well, for them to get to the speed they need to go, because they do have to churn these out, it might be a writer-artist, but he'll have someone else drawing the backgrounds, which you don't see in American comics at all.
No.
And I was thinking, you should, because a lot of the backgrounds in American comics are pretty horrible, because they are focusing on the characters, and, you know, you look at a lot of portfolios, and they really, like, love drawing the characters in these poses, but then they
True.
I mean, you can't be good at everything.
It's just a different sensibility, I guess. When the Americans do backgrounds, it's usually like photo manipulation stuff. There's a lot of that lately. It's, you know, the superheroes in the foreground are the focus.
It's really interesting. I actually read an interview once about one of the manga artists, and his job basically was to draw telephone poles. Anytime they needed a telephone pole for one of these, you know, like Shonen Champion or Shonen Jump or any of the particular volumes, they go, all right, do you want to draw some telephone poles for us? And send them off. So that's what that was his expert, and he could do really, really good ones.
Yeah.
But that's all he did.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it's really interesting that it's just
telephone pole artist.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
With the time frames they have to work to get... Some of them, they're on weekly.
Wow.
Because they'll have a few different magazines coming out. So that one's like the monthly one. But I'm sure that's like a 30-page issue of an ongoing story, whereas the one that came out last week is the previous part, even though it's a different magazine title. And that must be torture.
Yeah.
I know that's what killed Hergé in the end, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because he had a lot of assistance as well.
Okay.
I'm trying to think.
The Tintin guy.
Yes, the Tintin guy.
Well, I just need to clarify. Yeah. What else have you been reading?
The Tintin guy. That's basically it, seriously. We can talk about 45 later.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I'll let you guys have a chance.
Johnny, what have you been reading, my friend?
Well, I haven't been picking up heaps of bits and pieces lately. I usually get stuff in trades as they come out. But the one that I picked up most recently was the second part of the Parker adaptation that's being done by Darwin Cook.
Yes.
So this is a 20-volume novel series written by... Richard Stark, which is the pseudonym of
Donald Westlake.
Yeah. So he's... Darwin Cook was a huge fan of these. And if you've ever seen any of Darwin Cook's sort of art style and things like that, it's very sort of, you know, 50s, 60s sort of throwback. It looks very nostalgic.
Like a James Bond movie poster.
Yeah, they all look very cool. And he's got this very sort of cartoony style to it. And that's what really drew me to these sort of things originally, because I'm a huge fan of his artwork.
Yep.
And I've read things like he's done the DC The New Frontier,
yes,
which was, you know, worked really well in the context of the actual story and all yep. these bits and pieces. So it brought, I picked this up as a Darwin Cook fan originally, and was really surprised when I picked up the first volume to find it was really sort of really gritty and really cool, and
yeah.
evoked this really interesting sort of world that's been created. Things. So it basically just follows the plot of a sort of a criminal, and he's got this big sort of score that he has to get. Because he's, you know, he's down on his luck at the moment, so he has to assemble a team, and there's betrayal in it, and he has to go back and get revenge, basically, on the people that sort of sold him out at the end of just before the, you know, the plot, the thing of the first novel, and that was The Hunter.
Yeah.
So this one here is actually the third book
okay.
in the actual series. So they've okay. skipped a volume in this one, but in the beginning you actually see there's a little bit of lead-in as to why some of the characters from the previous volume would have been important in this one here, so they all get linked back into the gala. Mm. So I think that's probably one of the more interesting books that I've read of the last couple of years in terms of things. I mean, it is an adaptation. It's not an original graphic novel.
Yeah.
So, but I think just the way he's actually put it all together is just really, really interesting. And yeah, I'm just a huge fan of Darwin Cook.
I did read The Hunter, the first one, yep. and I really liked
that.
Yeah,
we
actually.
Both did. Yeah, we disagreed on it a little bit. Yeah.
So if you haven't read The Hunter, can you read the outfit? And does it make sense?
You can do.
Okay.
There is a little bit of, I mean, the outfit does follow on because it's basically the people that he goes and annoys in the first volume.
Yeah.
Kind of getting a bit annoyed at him, so they're putting this big
hit
out at him, so they're tracking him all down. So he's, but it's very sort of loosely based. It could almost be, it just kind of explained that he's annoyed someone in the past.
Yeah, okay.
And if you know from the first one who he's annoyed,
yes,
then you kind of go, okay, well, this is why he's annoyed. But you just could just go on that saying.
Okay.
Well, yeah. But it's probably one of the more interesting things that I've read in the last
Made by IDW, hardcover.
Comes out in a quite nice-looking hardcover,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah.
Does this one have the... I guess the problem I had with the last one was there was a certain point where it just stopped and then there was a page of prose and pictures.
Yes.
Does this one do that still?
There is a bit of that.
Yeah.
It's kind of... Well, if you kind of think of it in the same way that they did it with Watchmen. You know how that was kind of, you know, sort of punctuated with these little stories and stuff that were kind of extra context sort of bits? So he's explaining one of the sort of heists that's happening, but it's from the perspective of this supposed sort of crime anthology novel, or, you know, like a magazine for people who are like in the criminal business.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of saying, oh, how they pulled off this big score against the outfit in this thing. So it's kind of taken from that perspective. And then after that, you get to see, it was written like a, you know, short story in the middle of it, and it's still illustrated and everything like that. So that's kind of in the middle of the actual book.
Okay.
And I think he just did that because to actually draw out the entire heist would have been
too exciting.
Well, I think
pacing-wise,
it wouldn't have worked. It's because the heist isn't that amazing. It's kind of more interesting to have. It's more of an anecdote to be told.
Okay.
So, kind of what happened in this, I won't ruin it for anyone. But yeah, it kind of works in that way. But yeah, I can understand why you would have been a bit put off by the first bit, because there was quite a bit of that in the first one.
It was all flashbacks to him in Vietnam or something.
Yeah, there's lots of different flashbacks and things. So, it's interesting because when you know, Richard Stark wrote, or Donald Westlake wrote this original novel series, he didn't actually intend to continue it on past the first book. It was written as a throwaway character, and originally in the original book he got killed by police at the end. So, but it was overly very successful, and everyone was super impressed with it, so they're like, alright, you have to crank out a few more.
Yeah.
And then the next year he did 4 in 1 year. So,
wow.
Yeah. It's really interesting because it was written back in 1962.
Oh, okay.
So back in those days,
I didn't know it was that old.
You kind of had to get it out, kind of channel these things.
Crime's always been a very popular genre.
Yeah.
It's basically all I've seen on TV lately, that's for sure. I can't switch to anything without seeing a crime murder show. But this isn't so much of a murder thing. He's not a detective.
No, he's kind of just... You kind of get behind him because he's sort of a cheeky character, and he's very clever. And it's, you know, if you've watched things, it's just a heist sort of thing, and that's why everyone kind of like heist movies. It's really cool to see when everything just kind of comes together.
I like the in heist movies, the finding the team.
Yeah,
bits,
and there's always a bit of finding the team in this.
Yeah.
He goes back and he finds the people he can trust, so he's like testing the waters and doing all these particular things and coming across people. And, you know, there's one he has to go and approach when he's doing the reconnaissance for the whole mission and everything. He approaches this former actor that he knows, and now he's trying to run like a community theatre thing, but that's not working because all the people around him don't really appreciate the theatre.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, look, no, nobody's appreciating me at the moment. They're not going to miss me if I'm gone, so I'll be in on your job, basically.
Sounds like the Blues Brothers just...
Yeah, it's kind of all that sort of thing. It's really quite interesting the way they do it. So,
is the author of the original story still alive?
No, he actually just passed away just before the first volume came out. So Darwin Cook, I was reading an interview last night, and apparently was in a lot of sort of contact with him, trying to discuss. Cool. And, you know, so he was, they were very much involved with the whole thing. And the first thing he said was, Donald Westlake was like, oh, I'm not really sure if Park would be the sort of character that would actually translate well to comics.
Yep.
But then he goes, and then they sent him off some work of Darwin Cook, and he goes, but that Darwin Cook guy is pretty good. So he goes, all right, we know the editor from IDW was like, all right, we know we've hooked him now. So they were talking quite a bit, but just before the volume, the first volume of the Parker the Hunter came out, he did pass away.
Okay. Because I was hoping there'd be a point where Darwin Cook would work with him on an original story, but I guess that can't happen now.
Yeah, unfortunately not, but...
Bummer.
Yeah. Cool.
That's a down note.
Yeah, I know.
But it's a good book and it's fun.
Yeah, well, and if you like,
lighten things up.
If you like, he's not adapting every single book in the series.
Okay.
He's doing about sort of four or five of them. The next one's not due to come out until 2012. So if you picked up this one like me and was super excited for the next volume, you flick to the end page and it goes, next volume 2012. You've got a bit to wait now.
Mm-hmm. I'll put money on that there's probably going to be a movie made on this in a couple of years.
Well, the first one actually was made into a movie. You know the movie Payback?
With Mel Gibson?
Yes, with
Mel
Gibson. I did hear that. Yes.
Yeah, that was actually an adaptation of...
The Hunter?
Love the Hunter.
Wow.
So, but obviously they changed a bit of the bits of the story and, you know, changed the characters and Mel Gibson. But, so.
Is that the one that just came out?
No, this was like...
90s.
Yeah, I think...
Because he does a lot of revenge movies.
That was a very...
My daughter!
Yeah, and it was actually adapted earlier as well, I think back in the 70s with Lee Marvin as well.
Wow.
And it was actually called, The Hunter. So
I picture Bruce Willis doing this for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. The character I get, he's sort of more of a... I don't know, someone more like sort of a George Clooney character, but I don't know.
Cool.
Because he's kind of suave and he's kind of, you know, gentlemanly, but he's really, you know, you've got to have one of the, you know, when George Clooney plays one of these roles and he's not being the charming character, he's being sort of a bit more, you know, brutal, a bit like...
I like that, Siriani is a little bit more...
Yeah, exactly, that sort of thing, you know, you're having a bit grittier. So that would be,
I watched The Losers last night.
Yep.
And maybe the Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who was in Watchmen, played the comedian Watchmen.
Yeah, something like that as well, but... Yeah, I think you kind of want some maybe a little bit younger now.
Yeah.
But you want someone who kind of can get that sort of same thing across.
What do you think of The Losers?
Yeah, based on the DC Vertigo series from Andy Diggle and Jock. And
oh, was it Andy Diggle? Wow, okay.
I think so. And I preferred the A-Team, I've got to say.
I've said.
The Losers was disappointing. I mean, yeah, it's got Star Trek's Zoe Saldana.
Yep.
Star Trek and Avatar's in it, and Chris Evans, Captain America, Human Torch is in it, and then Jeffrey Dean Morgan. So it's got a
the
bit
dude
of
from The Wire, and I can't remember his name now. One of the detectives from The Wire. Don't worry.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think he plays the traitor. Spoilers.
It was cool. It was kind of action packed, and they used comic stuff for the intro credits and the closing credits.
Oh, okay.
So that was cool, but
not during the film, all right.
No, but other than that, it was just pretty much standard, blowing things up and stuff.
Hmm.
Mildly disappointing.
Oh,
I do have the trade sitting in my stack of unread books at home, so I will have to read the actual Losers trade paperback and compare.
Okay.
Scott Pilgrim, have you been reading Scott Pilgrim?
I'm a huge fan of Scott Pilgrim. I've been reading since like when the first volume came out.
Okay.
I was interested in it because, you know, when I started getting into graphic novels and comics and stuff, I originally came from reading manga.
Okay.
And things like that. So American and English language manga can be a bit hit and miss.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was looking at this and I thought, oh, this looks kind of cool. And I started reading the first volume and I read it and I really liked it. But then I left it for about sort of, you know, 6 to 8 months before I picked up volume 2 and 3. So I've started with those. And just as it goes along, the first bit's, you know, it's a bit amateurish. You can tell he's sort of testing the waters and all that sort of thing. And he's kind of putting a few bits and pieces in there. But as it goes along, it really builds up and...
Yeah.
It's really been one of our most popular series of the last couple of...
Because you work at a comic shop?
Yeah. It's been really... It's just been really flat out. And you have lots of people who are just coming in that you've never seen before who want to come pick it up and they hear something cool about it.
From the film or whatever.
It's really the book that's written about, like, my childhood and my history in comics. Because, he talks about things in there. He's like, you know, at one point he's got this jacket and he's got, like, the X-Men X-Liner logo tie. And he goes, all these... And he throws back and there's a bit further down and, like... the series where he's talking about, he's just, you know, it's background scenes and it's just kind of talking about the whole relationship between the two characters, Scott Pilgrim and Ramona Flowers, and, you know, they're having a bit of trouble and he's just talking in the background, but he's also talking about like old, you know, 90s Marvel, X-Men and sort of plot lines, and you read those and if you didn't know what it was about then it wouldn't mean anything to you. You pick up these things and you read it and you just go, oh, that's really interesting, because you have like sort of this nostalgia for it. I think it was really, really good in the way it's been sort of executed. It did start off a bit
It's true what you say. Yeah, like if you compare, because I've read all five, and if you compare the first volume to the last, which was seventh or eighth, it's completely, it looks like two different, well, not two different artists, but you can see just the confidence in the final volume. Just it's bolder, it's leaping off the page.
I think there's also what happened, he did a similar thing with, you know, so the Japanese artist, they actually had a lot of people come in and actually help him with bits and pieces as well. So as it gets along, it became more complex, and you know, the stories became, the characters became a bit more fleshed out. And I mean, it's full of lots of pop culture references.
It is.
So, you know, if you like your Nintendo video games and all your 90s comics and all those sorts of things, if that's the sort of thing you grew up with and it's the sort of thing you know, then you're going to love it for that reason. And, I mean, it came out as a film as well, and it was pretty successful in what it did. Well, not, you know.
No, the film wasn't successful.
Not critically successful. Like, it was critically successful, but it wasn't financially successful.
Which is unusual.
But I think in the way that it was adapted, that was pretty successful, sort of capturing the tone of what they were doing.
I thought it was great. It'll fly off the shelves on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was one of those things where you kind of wish that you didn't watch, or you didn't know this original context of the original story, because, you know, I have this problem with everything, because I often, like, you know, you read these things and then you watch the film and you're just like, well, I've had all these expectations and now I'm a bit disappointed by what they actually did with it, because it's not the direction I thought they would take it in. So that's the only thing. I think it's really good until about halfway the film, and then after that they
change. I almost got sick of the fighting at a point.
There's a bit where it just kind of almost jumps the shark, and it didn't really, because it was very different to the way they actually handled it in the book as well.
Okay.
So I think if they'd stuck more to the way it was done in the book,
because I didn't buy the romance really in the film.
No.
And I have a feeling that was more fleshed out in the book. And
it definitely was. The romance was a bit sort of two-dimensional really in the film.
She was like a prize.
Yeah, exactly. It was just that's it. Once you've beaten all the bosses, you unlock this achievement. You know? It was just like, that's the sort of...
I did like Nega Scott though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of... I think definitely one of these series that you should definitely check out if you get the chance to actually read the graphic novels.
I've been curious, as you said, it was just going gangbusters in the store and just, I guess you guys can't get enough copies to sell.
We literally can't, to be honest. Yeah.
What sort of people are coming in and getting it? Is it your regulars in the store, or are people who've never been in the store before coming in?
Lots of people who've never been in the store before who watched the film and thought it was really interesting.
Okay.
And I think, and for people I've talked to as well, they who've watched the film really liked it and thought, oh, it's really cool and interesting the way they did it. And then they go back and read the books and really like it. But I think if a lot of people who've read the things and do it the same direction I did it, had a bit of a problem with the way they sort of did it in the film. And, you know, there's obviously the constraints with doing it as a film and the way that... But yeah, we're having lots of people that I've basically never seen before.
Right. Did they move on from Scott Pilgrim to others? Other stuff?
Do they come and say, I like
recommend?
This?
Yeah, well, they do sometimes.
Okay.
Cool. It's sort of like, it's a gateway book into the comic world.
I suppose Kick-Ass would be the same.
Well, that's it. You start with something as well, and, like, it's... You know, you see patterns in the way that people read things.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they go, oh, they really like this, then you can go, all right, well, you're into sort of this sort of thing, but what did you take from that? And, you know, so you do have people come back.
Cool.
And that sort of thing.
But what's the next thing they get? I'm curious.
Well, usually they go for the next sort of... Well, there's one other thing. It's written by Brian Lee O'Malley.
Lost at Sea?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people often go and get that. And then if you go... Well, if you like... Lost at Sea is a bit more like your sort of alternative graphic novel.
Oh, yeah.
So if they really like the sort of way that went, you can go, okay, we'll try something else, maybe like, you know, Blankets or something to that effect. You know, you try one of those.
Okay.
Or maybe something like Demo as well. Demo is a really good one, because that's a Vertigo series and that sort of youth.
Looks similar as well in
terms
of
style, it's kind of all about that sort of thing. So you can kind of go, all right, we'll try that, because Vertigo's a bit more thing. And then, obviously, if they like the Vertigo thing more than they like the alternative publisher thing, then they go on to Vertigo stuff, or they, you know, because you'll have lots of people. But again, a lot of people in this also go, oh, I really like that. That reminds me of watching X-Men on TV as I was a kid.
Yeah.
What's happening in X-Men? You know?
Okay, right.
So it's kind of interesting, because it's kind of... branches to whole different bits and pieces. So.
And when they ask what's happening in X-Men, you ask them, sit down, this will take a while.
Pull up a chair.
Just look at Wiki.
Would you like a cup of tea?
Yeah.
So.
What's happening with the Australian-American dollar? Is that going to affect comic prices in Australia?
Well, I mean, it does and it doesn't. For
they're almost the same now.
I think last night I was reading that they actually hit one-to-one, basically. I think Australian dollar was worth more than the American dollar.
What was the word you said?
It's parity.
Parity.
It's what pirates have sitting on their shoulders.
Yep.
Well, the characteristics of what they have, so it hit that last night, and it does make an it affects us thing, because obviously the biggest cost is the currency conversion, and then also the shipping costs as well.
So you guys would be paying less.
Yeah, it works out to be a bit less
Okay,
for what we're doing. But the way that we've kind of set it up is we kind of, you just kind of float a bit. Yeah. So you don't quite charge exactly what it's worth.
What really. Yeah. No.
You kind of have to set it so when it isn't as good,
yeah, that's
you've
right.
got to kind of say it.
Yeah. So, covering your
overheads. So things that like, we'll you'll see probably the big changes in are things like statues and stuff.
Okay.
Because they, right. as they get charged, they'll be each week.
Oh, so, okay.
Books and things will kind of always sort of be around.
And them. You guys order your stuff like 2 months, yeah, they're in, months advance in advance anyway. So.
They get charged a couple yeah. of, you know, at the beginning of the month and stuff like that. So it's yeah. kind of, you've got a, there's a bit of a delay in what you'll see.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Cool.
But yeah. it's interesting. It's really good if you are after a particular series
yeah.
and they're hard to find mm. and things like that. And especially now you can get all this stuff on the internet as well.
Yeah. eBay will probably be going crazy right now.
Yeah, Amazon. I've just, like all my friends have been saying to me, have you seen the cost of the dollar? Because we do a lot of buying online.
Yes.
Buy heaps of stuff online. So they're just like, oh, we've got to think of like a list of all the things I want to buy yeah. and things like that now. So, yeah. I think one of the interesting things to do is like picking up like art prints and stuff.
Okay.
That's what I was planning to do.
Speaking of art prints, I don't think we mentioned it last week, but Outre Gallery.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, that's just mm-hmm. opened up in Perth.
Okay.
And there's a few... outlets, I guess, in Sydney and Melbourne. Is that right?
Yeah, they have one in. Yeah, they have one in Melbourne.
Outre.
Outre. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. With an accented E at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. yeah, and they've got one in Melbourne. That was the first one I visited, and it used to be sort of my go to place
yep.
in Melbourne whenever I've visited there. Mm. And they've got a lot of different pop art sort of prints, mm-hmm. and okay. they're all framed up, and they're really good. And it's kind of just putting it as this sort of like really cool sort of thing. And they have artists like James Jean, and they had a few cool. Robert Crumb ones, and all.
I saw a Charles Burns.
Of, Black Hole.
Black yep. Hole. Yeah. I saw Chris Ware in the oh, okay. in the
at
catalog.
Novelty Library.
Yep. Yeah, and I would love to get a Chris Ware print.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Awesome. And it's interesting that sort of thing you can actually get sort of in Australia now, because obviously yeah. back in the day, if you wanted that sort of thing, you'd have to either find a really expensive place to buy it online, not know what you're getting until it actually sort of turns up mm-hmm. and run the gamble, or, say, fly over to the States and hit up a convention or something like yeah. that and try to pick up one of these art prints. And I know there are a few people, some of our customers who come in and go, oh, look, we've found... You know, they are just art collectors, so yeah, they'll go yeah. and make friends with all the different particular artists and pick up bits and pieces. But yeah, now that you can kind of get these sort of things and they're kind of reasonably priced as well,
yeah.
you can get them in Perth is really good. Mm. But they, cool. then again, you can also get them online now.
Yeah, but these are all yeah original prints of a limited run. They're all signed by the artist usually. So I guess it pays to do that instead of getting, say, the $20 print online, which will probably fade after a year anyway because it's printed on terrible paper.
Yeah.
So it's worth spending a little bit more sometimes if you have somewhere to hang it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Find a place.
Yeah. Chris, go down there.
Okay. I will check that out at my earliest convenience.
That's no.
Yeah. I've been reading a bunch of stuff. It's a pretty big week last week, actually, in relation to new comics that are coming out. I was showing the guys this morning, Iron Man by Design, which is pretty cool, talking about art-related type things.
That's pretty awesome, yeah.
When Iron Man 2 hit cinemas, basically Marvel had a whole bunch of variant covers where 22 of their covers had variant Iron Man-themed covers and different artists would do it, and then they did an extra four in June. So this is called Iron Man by Design, and it's basically got all of those 26 in total variant covers represented in all their glory by different artists. So we've got, you know, like Art Deco versions of Iron Man, and then there's like a cowboy one, there's a Japanese Deco. Robot one by Tetsuya Aoki. So there's a lot of non-comic artists that do this work here. There's like an Art Nouveau one by John Tyler Christopher, who's new, who does a lot of Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing card kind of work. There's one where Iron Man looks like a 50s car.
I like the colours in that one.
By Dave Taylor. Yeah, there's like a World War One one. There's one where he's in the Civil War. There's an Ancient Egypt one by Adi Granov. There's a pretty awesome one where he's a pinball machine. There's a Monster Hunter one by French artist Fred Genet. So, yeah, if you like different art and different art styles, each page is basically a variant cover represented with Iron Man in all different shapes and forms. Does, and then a quick bio on the artist, and I don't know how much it costs. I don't care for such things.
I was going to say, is it like a normal comic then?
Yeah, it's actually printed on different paper, and I don't know why Marvel have done that, but...
yeah, it's almost like a vinyl cover they've got.
It's pretty funky.
It's the same price as a normal comic.
Maybe it'll survive being flicked through a bit more.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously there's no story involved. It's just, you know, 26 pretty pictures, and then there's a quick biography on each artist, and a rundown of... what the inspiration behind the piece was. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I actually liked it.
I think they could have gone all out and made, like, a poster book where you could pull the prints out and hang them up.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. That's true. They could do that.
Because I think that would have sold brilliantly. But, yeah, anyway. Marvel, pay attention.
Lady Mechanica, number 0. We're talking about Lady Mechanica with a K. N-I-K-A. From, who is this from? This is from Aspen, who do Fathom and that kind of stuff. So this is actually created, written and drawn by Jay Benitez, colours by Peter Stegwald, who does a lot of, he's probably, I guess, one of the most famous colourists in the comics. So this is Lady Mechanica number zero. Number one, the proper series kicks off in December. It's originally thought it'd be like a kind of tongue-in-cheek, because it's basically like a steampunk, almost like a Kate Beckinsale type heroine set in, I think it's set in London, I can only assume by the way they're speaking, in 1878. And it's got pretty good, like even the captions are kind of got like old-timey kind of font and you know, kind of borders around them. So basically it's this woman who's, you know, kind of steampunky and got goggles and a big rifle and made of kind of mechanical parts. And then the village people are, and this arms dealer are chasing down this demon who's been slaying people, and she finds him and befriends him, and then she finds out more about her origin.
I think Johnny and I are laughing at the same thing. The village people are chasing her.
Oh, the village people. You can't stop the music, baby, to come back here. The people of the village. It's actually pretty good. I must say I enjoyed this, and I didn't expect to. But I did. It looks good. It's a fairly dark book. You can kind of see I'm flicking through the pages. It's quite black.
Yeah.
But it's actually really good. The costume design is awesome. And it's got, like, sketches. Joe Benitez
supplementary material. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this might even be the first series he's actually written. I don't know. He's been an artist for a while. And it's got something that I've never seen in a comic before.
Go on. It's called, guess. No.
The Steampunk Kitchen, and it's got how to make mechanic cookies in the shape of gear, and steampunk tarts, which sounds like some kind of cosplaying woman. But yeah, so that's the first time I've ever seen that in a comic. There's two recipes.
Wow. I sorted that Wolverine comic once.
What? How to make adamantium?
No, I made that up.
Lemon quiches.
Although Johnny did find something interesting in a comic the other day.
Yeah, because I was checking through the...
Checking through
all the old comics. Because like, one of the things I like doing when you're looking at really old comics is just looking at ads.
Oh, yes.
Because it's kind of like you're taking... It's like a snapshot of looking back in time and seeing the sort of things that are advertising at the time. Yeah, and we found this really old... It's for like, it's like a powdered sort of cordial like sample that was actually inside the actual comic. Because I picked it up and I think it was this bulging kind of in the middle. Maybe there's like a piece of cardboard and it's like a... You know, join the US Army sort of brochure thing in the middle, which you see quite often. Yeah. But it was actually, we had this sort of like, it's like sort of cordial, mix it with water.
It still tastes good.
I wasn't game enough to try it. But I don't think it would be
evacuate the shop.
We were saying it's just sugar crystals and...
Yeah, and maybe a bit of gelatin. I don't think there'd be anything.
No, true.
Yeah, so...
Awesome.
But that was food related, I guess. True. I like in that steampunk book that the cover actually looks like the art in the book.
Yeah, it's actually, even like everything about the book, like, like the cover, it's kind of got like this gothic approach to it. Even the titles page is a splash page, and the title page is like old kind of graphics and the font they use. And like, it's actually, you can tell that Benitez has obviously thought about the publication of the book itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's more than just a sexually clad female. And I mean, most of her body is covered, which I'm happy about. And I know I'm a guy and that may sound weird, but... Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's actually, it's quite a good book. And
you feel less skeezy reading it.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? That new Zack Snyder movie coming out? The Sucker Punch, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That actually looks quite good. He's directing Superman. Talking about Superman, Mark Miller and Lionel Francis Yu, Mark Miller is the writer, Lionel Francis Yu is the artist, they're working on a new book called Superior, which has been teased for a while now. And the cover has got a red-clad hero with looks like Hulk Hogan's championship wrestling belt. And there's a guy in a wheelchair with a monkey in an astronaut suit sitting beside him. So it's called Superior. I think it's a six-issue series launched this week from Icon, which is Marvel's creator-owned imprint, which is Kick-Ass and that. So Mark Miller is the writer of Wanted, Kick-Ass, Nemesis, which isn't that great. Superior is... Well, there have already been talks about making Superior into a film, unsurprisingly.
No.
But especially this kid, he has multiple sclerosis. But he used to be a star basketballer. Him and his mate get picked on. Superior is the name of this made-up character. He's like Superman, so he's been around for decades and decades. People think he's lame. He's starring in his fifth film in this franchise. And then... The lead character, Simon Pooney, whose name may sound a bit odd, but it is charitable. It was auctioned off.
It's a wonderful name.
Kick-Ass and Nemesis.
We're poor to tease.
So, and basically, yeah, the kid with multiple sclerosis gets transformed into Superior and even looks like the actor who played him in the Superior movie. And so he doesn't know why. Just this monkey comes and wakes him up, and then he gets transported, a beam of light hits him. So there's no explanation, there's no origin, there's no answers offered in this first issue. There's a bit of profanity, but apart from that, it's like Mark Miller's most kid-friendly book to date. Yeah, it's actually, I mean, it's not entirely original. But you expect big ideas from Mark Miller. I mean, this is the guy behind, you know, he also wrote like Civil War and Old Man Logan and stuff. You expect big ideas.
Big profitable ideas.
So, yeah, I'll keep reading it.
Mark Miller's another one of those people who just, anything that he writes, people will go and pick up everything.
Yeah,
and he's not shy in coming forward. He's quite the showman, and he's making more and more strides. Like, his last three books are becoming films, so even Superior, which has only just been released, is already in talks for a film, so... Hmm. Yeah, and lastly, I also just read this very morn, City of Demons, a new Hellblazer miniseries. Hellblazer, as seen in the Constantine film.
Let me have a flick there.
Someone was talking to at work. So this is a 5-issue miniseries written by Cy Spencer, who's an English writer whose work I'm not familiar with. I don't think he's done much superhero stuff. Art is by Sean Murphy, who also works with Grant Morrison on another Vertigo series, Joe the Barbarian, which is kind of like Superior, actually. That's Morrison, isn't it? Joe the Barbarian? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is called City of Demons, and I'm not that familiar with Hellblazer, but I like the art. It's kind of line work. It's quite...
it's a really good match for the Hellblazer title. That's
yeah,
for sure.
And very it's not ink, dark.
Very penny.
Yeah, and the colours are quite subdued, but it works quite well. So, basically, what happens is Hellblazer... I didn't know this, but maybe, Milan, you can explain it to me. Does he have any powers? Because there's this bit where he's getting accosted by these hoodies in London.
Yeah, he's a magician.
And then he tells them what to do. Yeah, he says, no, you stab each other kind of thing, and he does
a shaman.
A she-man?
A shaman.
Oh, right.
He's a she-man.
Yeah,
he's so like
he can tell
magician.
People what to do.
Yeah.
Like the guy in Preacher.
It's kind of slightly different the way he does it, but yeah, it's all sort of...
Kind of telepathy and...
Old-fashioned magic, you know.
Okay.
Whenever the plot needs him to do something, then his magic works, okay. And when... They need him to get caught. His magic doesn't work.
Right.
So that's basically Constantine for you.
Yeah, I think you'll like this, actually, man. It's a pretty good series.
It looks good, yeah.
I love the artist, I must say. And, yeah, so basically he gets hit by a car, but he doesn't know it, and then he dies, and he's like a ghost, and he's walking around, and he's trying to figure out who killed him. Mm. So he's hanging out with all these other ghosts and trying to figure out which one is an actual ghost, kind of hanging out in the afterlife,
cool.
And which ones are like actors hired by devils in hell.
Finally, a different plot line for Hellblazer.
In 3 months. Are you being sarcastic?
Well, they tend to repeat their plot lines a little bit.
The devils are after me kind of thing.
Usually there'll be some girlfriend he has and she'll die and he'll have to try and bring her back, but it'll cause more problems.
Oh, okay.
And does that sound familiar,
yeah. Johnny? Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But I mean, it's hard when it's a series like this, as I was saying.
It's running for so long, so many great writers.
It's a Vertigo series that's probably the longest running Vertigo series ongoing, easily. It's over 200 issues now. Mm. Almost 300. They're on the late 200s now. So you can kind of understand why they might have a bit of repetition in the way they do it. I mean, everything like that, you just, if you keep it going for long enough, you just can't help escaping doing the same thing a few times. So
I mean, this is pretty good. The art kind of uses like the Bendy dots, kind of the duotone, kind of almost pop arty kind of feel in some of the places. So I mean, the colours are, I guess, a bit flat, but it kind of works. Like even a lot of it's kind of set in this sterile hospital environment. And, it's actually pretty good. I mean, there's obviously a bit of profanity, but it's very London. It's not like an American writer trying to sound like an English character.
Yeah.
It actually sounds authentically English.
They tend to get English writers to do the title,
And then the last page is kind of where you can see basically these two doctors get a sample of Hellblazer's Constantine's blood. And then they're like, this is interesting. This isn't normal blood. We can do something with this.
What?
So that's interesting. And it's also got a preview of Vertigo's crime series of books, which you mentioned earlier. And they're which are basically like digest, black and white digest by a well-known crime writer. So this one's called A Sickness in the Family. It's written by Denise Mina, who did a book called Slip of the Knife. And Hellblazer, Empathy is the Enemy, apparently. So that comes out sometime soon. Greg Rucker likes it. It's black and white art by Antonio Fuso. I haven't read the previews. I don't know what it's about. But it's actually pretty good. So if you like Hellblazer and just like something a bit more gritty and dark, then City of Demons number one is definitely the place to go.
Mm. Good time to jump on board for the start of a Hellblazer run.
That's what I've been reading this week.
Whew.
That was a lot to get through, wasn't it? You did it. I should also mention Strange Tales 2, which I think you mentioned last week or the week before, Mladen. Basically, it's a Marvel series that came out recently. The second volume was also just launched. I picked it up of the first issue, Strange Tales 2, which is a cover by Rafael Grampa. So this is a three-issue series by Max, which is Marvel's more mature imprint.
Yes,
for his imprint, right. When the lights go down.
You got Punisher and Alias on that, and that's
yes.
Sort of thing.
So it's got basically they take a whole bunch of indie artists who haven't really worked on superhero stuff before, and say, here we go, do a few short stories and go crazy. So yeah, Rafael Grampa, Shannon Wheeler, Too Much Coffee Man, Dash Shaw, Juan and Jonan Vasquez, who did Johnny Homicide Maniac, Invader Zim, yep. And you mentioned Mladen
Kate. You got Kate Beaton, who does Harker Vagrant, which is a webcomic, which kind of in historical settings, it's a comedy comic, quite good. And Nick Gurich, who writes The Perry Barbell Fellowship, to write The Perry Barbell Fellowship, which is probably my favourite webcomic.
It looks like Joanne Vasquez ones. There's got a fat Wolverine was on him. it's a good idea for Marvel, I must say.
Yeah, I think it's great, yeah.
It kind of reminds me, DC did something years ago, I think, called Bizarro Comics.
Ah, okay.
I think they did a volume or two of that, where it's basically the same principle. So if you're not that familiar with... Well, even if you don't like superhero artists. And
I think superheroes lend themselves to comedy really well.
They do.
It's very easy to just make them absurd. Yeah,
yes.
But it's loving absurdity and satire in this, so I think anyone would enjoy this, even if you don't really care for superhero comics.
True. Similarly themed, I just want to mention the Liberty Annual 2010. This is from the CBLDF, which is a non-profit organisation that basically defend creators' rights, freedom of speech and all that kind of stuff. So every now and then they'll put out a comic to raise funds. And this is basically, it's got colour, black and white. It's the same kind of thing. So there's there's an original The Boys story. It's got work by Frank Miller, Paul Pope, Rob Liefeld, Garth Ennis, Jeff Johns, Gail Simone, Scott Conan on the cover. It's got a new Milk and Cheese story, a couple of Sin City pages, that kind of stuff. So, so that's pretty much the same thing as Strange Tales, kind of indie guys, but not doing superhero stuff.
Or comedy.
Yeah. But interesting nonetheless. And I guess this could be considered anthology. This week's trade swap is a book, 45. It's an OGN, an original graphic novel by a UK publisher called Comex, who are probably most well known for Class War, which is kind of a gritty superhero kind of tale.
Hmm.
45 is created and written by Andy Ewington. He's a graphic designer, I think, by trade, and this is his first comic. And this is one of those ideas that you think, this is so obvious, like, why didn't somebody else think of it before? But it works. I've read this, twice now.
Oh, wow.
Once when it first came out and I reviewed it, and then again when I forced it upon Mladen, thrust it into his face.
Yeah, he wouldn't leave me alone.
And I liked it. I really liked it. So basically the whole premise of this story is it follows a journalist called James Stanley. He's a British journalist, and him and his wife are expecting their first child. So basically in this world, in the world of 45, you could either be born as a Norman, which is like a normal person, like us, the three of us gentlemen here without superpowers.
Well,
two of us here.
Yes.
or your kid could be born with a super S gene, which basically means they could be born as a super powered individual.
Is his expected child got the gene, or he just doesn't know?
He doesn't know. In this story, the kid hasn't been born yet.
Yeah.
But there's
a test they can take, just like a...
Yeah, that's true. There's a test to see if they're going to be Norman or kind of super S. The journalist, goes around interviewing all these different superheroes to kind of say, if my kid is born as a superhero, what can I expect? So he talks to parents and that kind of stuff. So the actual format of the book is... there's two pages, so there's one full-page interview, and facing it on the left-hand page is a full page of art by a different artist.
Illustration, basically.
Yeah.
Some
of the artists will be familiar. People like Charlie Adlard or Fraser Irving, Jock, Sean Phillips, Liam Sharp, Matt Timpson, Kenneth Rocafort, and others are people that aren't really that familiar to superheroes. So, yeah, it's pretty good. It's called 45 because it's 45 different interviews. So you've got 45 different artists, 45 different interviews.
Yeah. And through the book, they sort of go up in age. So like there'll be a 2-year-old, then a 5-year-old, then a 16-year-old, then a, you know, no, I didn't keeps even going.
Notice yeah. that
the last yeah. ones are like all 65 years old. And okay, stuff. Yeah, if that in that sense, it reminded me of that BBC documentary.
Oh, Seven Up,
Seven Up, yeah,
okay, yes.
And I thought, okay, that's sort of taking it kind of, you know, in a serious sort of
yeah. vein.
But yeah, I guess it's sort of set in our world, and so some of the terms like Vaders for guys who have turned evil.
Yeah, oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah, he's a little bit tongue-in-cheek a bit. I guess, yeah, when I was reading it, there's a bit of a through line. So the interviewer with his child, and he keeps bringing up this organization, which is
yes, probably it's like a shadowy organization that's kind of referred to. And yeah, so it's good. Like each interview kind of builds a bit more of the world more.
I would have liked it maybe a little bit more of that, but it's hard to do in this kind of interview.
Yeah, because it's not a traditional narrative. It's not a story as such. But I actually found it interesting. I mean, you think the premise of the 45 different interviews, that's got to be pretty boring. But Andy Ewington, the writer, does such a good job of making each interview sound unique. Like, I tried to read that World War Z book by Max Brooks, which is kind of similar. Like, he basically interviews survivors of a zombie apocalypse and stuff. But there, I think the thing that turned me off with that book was a lot of them, the interviews kind of sounded the same. Whereas here, they're all... Every person's got a different cadence in their speech, a different way of speaking. He travels the world, this journalist. I liked it. It was quite a surprise, quite a pleasant surprise. I enjoyed it. If you're new to superheroes, it's an awesome book to get a hold of.
Yeah. I thought, because I'm not that into superheroes, I thought I could see what someone who is into superheroes would find. It's got that sort of same appeal as Marvel's.
Like, yeah, it's sort of everyman approach.
Yeah, makes everything seem spectacular again kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's got that same thing, which I don't care for too much, as superhero novels, where it's almost like a pat on the back, like, isn't this amazing? Like,
okay.
You know, what this superhero thing is. But when you don't care for that genre so much, it's kind of like, okay. But I did like how he tries to differentiate different styles. So, when you get to, the 25-year-old guys, some of them are basically, your image superheroes with, blades and armor and all this stuff. Yeah. And there's a teenage Japanese girl with knives who's, like, a manga murdering, that blood manga?
Yeah.
The children ones are, basically straight out of X-Men, right down to some of the dialogue I noticed was straight out of the movie.
Oh, okay.
No powers!
Yeah.
And Johnny just had a flick through. Any initial thoughts?
Well, I really like the way that there's different artists for each particular one. So, and they're also because, you've only got one page per hero as well, which is good. So, I mean, I guess if one page didn't really appeal to you, you've got, another 44 to go, really? So I think it's kind of good that he's kind of mixing up. I haven't had a really good chance to read all the dialogue in it, but I think art-wise it was really sort of interesting to see the different sort of characters as well, and it's good that it's kind of an interesting collaboration they've got between all the different, artists and everything. So
It would have been a lot of work to just to organise it, and he talks about that in the epilogue, and also how the inspiration behind Ewington's him and his wife had a kid for real, and during this time, so that's kind of what kicked off this idea.
Yeah,
said
4 hours before he finished the book was
when
the
it went.
Birth of the child. Yeah.
So a couple of highlights for me was just reading it again was there's a couple of heroes called Solar Flare and Carbon Copy Carbon Copy's the psychic, I believe, and they're kind of jealous of each other. And then they're bickering throughout the whole interview, and each interview has kind of got the journalist's sides in italics, so it gives you a brief intro of the superhero, and then throughout the interview he'll say what's happening, and then basically the interview ends this one with them fighting each other, and the journalist just kind of leaving. But you can see the tension and the way they're speaking to each other throughout the interview. There's a character called Material Girl who's pretty cool. She's basically kind of like the Absorbing Man, Thor character, who can touch some kind of texture and they turn into that. So she's got this costume with a bit of fabric and a bit of concrete and different sample kind of boards on her costume, and she touches things, and she she's just become a mother, and she's her kid's, I think, 5 or 6 years old, and her kid really wants to grow up to be a super like her mum, like his mum. But
he doesn't have any powers.
Right? No, he doesn't have any powers, and she knows that he won't because he doesn't have the gene, but she doesn't want to tell him to let him down.
It's like saying whether Santa Claus doesn't exist.
So then there's another one. There's a Scottish superhero who's given up in the superhero game and just regrets not saving his mentor's life and that kind of stuff. So, it's a good idea, and as you said, it kind of builds this bigger picture of the world. And New York Comic Con, which just happened, Comic-Con in New York, funnily enough. Comics announced that there's going to be some spin-offs, so that's all we know. So I guess maybe a couple of these characters will have their own one-shots or miniseries.
It felt like a big pitch document, actually, reading through some of them. Like, these are all the superheroes I could think of.
Yeah.
Go.
I mean, 45 is pretty... That's an impressive number, especially for a first-time writer. Mm. So I'd be curious to read some of those, because he does... I mean, with one page and without any kind of standard narrative kind of devices... Just in dialogue only, he reveals a lot about these characters, who they are, what their motivations are, that kind of stuff. That's pretty impressive.
There's one I liked with a guy who works in a comic shop, and he's bitching that all the good names are taken and copyrighted. Okay. So you couldn't name yourself Spider-Man and not expect to be sued.
Yeah.
But if you're into superheroes, or you want to try something a bit different, and if you dug Marvels, I reckon you'd probably like this for sure.
Yeah, and it's got some good tone, like you said, something more humorous. It's pretty got like some dark stuff in there as well. Like,
you can dip into it. I find it's one of those books.
It's not something you have to read through all in one sitting. So that's 45. It's got kind of red beigey kind of cover by UK publisher Comics, hardcover relatively. So you can pick it up now, and they've got some more comics. They've got some awesome stuff coming out in the coming months. So keep your eye on their website.
We thought we'd make the most of having Johnny here, as he is a comic book retailer. We were curious what's selling on the shelves, really. Like, what's the top titles? Because,
well, a lot of things that go to... If you're talking about, okay, people who come in regularly get their sort of, their Marvel and DC, and they'll pick up maybe Vertigo titles, and, your smaller publishers, and, depending on the person, type of person, they'll have their kind of thing for regular customers. For people who come in off the street, things that often go really well are adaptations of things.
So True Blood, maybe? Or?
Yeah, like True Blood's got
Buffy.
Buffy's probably our biggest seller still.
Okay.
So you just have people who come in to get Buffy and Angel and all the affiliated Whedon.
Okay. And they
like
won't
that.
Get anything else? They'll just stick
sometimes
to that
they will get other things as well, but most of the time they'll just stick to that. That's most of what they think. But yeah, adaptations. So, like, for example, if they bring out like a video game and they bring in a prequel kind of things like that, or, movie things, and, like they're making adaptations for, films that have come out and stuff like that. All these bits and pieces, like, they go. But it really sort of depends on the sort of person that comes in. But yeah, sort of things that are going off the shelf are just sort of like, Scott Pilgrim's and all those sort of things.
So how do people that aren't regular readers and just newbies that come off the street, how do they hear about you?
I'm not 100% sure.
They Google just, Perth Comic Shop.
Yeah, I guess they, like, some people, some people have no idea where we are.
Yeah.
To be honest. You know, like, they walk past it 100 times, they walk down the road, they've never seen it.
It's kind of underground
thing. Yeah,
it's
kind of hidden away.
Yeah.
But then other people, go, we were just searching up, and we get calls out of the blue occasionally.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. So I think internet makes a big difference.
Yeah, definitely.
For that sort of thing.
Do you think people are sometimes surprised when they come into the store?
Oh, all the time. People go, I had no idea this was here.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I see every day. And then, they go, it's a really cool shop you've got in here. And I go, thank you.
They expect some sort of dungeon, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It is a little bit... a bit dungeony. It does feel a bit...
It is underground.
We don't want it to be super... We want it to... my boss has always described it. You kind of want it to feel like someone's... Almost to be like someone's bedroom. Someone's a bit like familiar with it sort of thing. It's not going to be like going into this environment which is very, straight shelves and all these sort of things.
Right.
It's a big open space you got there.
Yeah.
And quality comics, we should mention.
Lots of bits and pieces all over the place as well. But yeah, you have all sorts of different people coming in of all different ages as well.
Ages was our next question because there was a survey about 2-3 weeks ago saying there's a lot of people over 65 reading comics, and we were curious.
A surprising percentage. I can't remember what it
was. Yeah, it was quite high, but we were wondering if that was true.
Yeah, the things that people... you see a lot of people who pick up, and again, these are people who often just pick up one or two things of things, but a really big sort of fella to the older sort of market would be Phantom Comics, because the people have been collecting them for years, and they...
Right.
Phantom people are fanatic.
Yeah.
Quite a
fanatic.
fanatic.
Yeah. It's a PH.
Exactly. They have really... They'll pick up anything they can find of Phantom stuff. So, for example, we had this joke that, if you made a Phantom toilet seat, people would buy it.
Yeah,
you know,
they just wouldn't sit on it.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't buy one.
As long as there's a skull on it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, anything they find. So if they'll go to garage sales and swap meets and things, and if they see a box full of them, they'll go, I'll buy that entire box to fill in bits and pieces.
Okay.
So there's people who want to collect those sort of things. But there's other things as well that you see people... And often there's a bit of crossover between them as well. People get things like your Tintins and your Lucky Lukes.
Yeah.
And so the European comics are quite popular with older people. Things like Modesty Blaze as well is really quite popular. And Commando comics as well.
Okay,
and
right.
So all sort
they still do those?
Yeah. They do
reprints.
Collections of them and stuff.
Okay, yep.
You can pick up now. But that sort of thing often goes very well. And also... things like 2000 AD as well.
Yeah.
Which are the anthology comics, which is, you know, I think a lot of it is very much a sort of a nostalgia purchase. You know, they've been doing it for like 20 years or something, or they pick it up and they go, oh, have you got like a Mad magazine? Because they used to read that 30 years ago or whatever. And
will they still get what's being satirized today?
Who's this Hannah Montana?
Yeah, exactly.
Lady Gaga?
Exactly. So it's like that sort of thing is the sort of thing you see for them.
Well, that's encouraging. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, I'm not surprised that a lot of them don't read up on the continuing adventures of Spider-Man or Superman, I guess.
That's a surprise.
Well, I mean, and also for the same token, people who get that, they want to get things like the Essential Volumes.
Which are the reprints.
Yeah, the reprints of the older ones. Yeah, they wouldn't be too concerned about what Spider-Man's doing now.
No.
But it's the older sort of collections that people pick up. So your big things like Absolutes and things like that tend to go pretty well.
I suppose it's the kind of nostalgia behind, you know, getting a DVD box set of the Rockford Files or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same kind of mentality. Sort of thing, pretty much, yeah. So that's where you see a lot of those sort of things go to those sort of people. So
awesome.
I guess website of the week.
Yeah, website of the week is
CBR.
Something about ladies.
Yeah, okay. Comic Book Resources. I should say Kelly Thompson at Comic Book Resources. She has a column called She Has No Head! !
I don't know where that comes from, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But she's been launching something called the Ladies Comics Project, and I think she's released two or three parts to it now.
Yep.
And what she does is she finds various women who don't read comics, I guess friends of friends,
family
members,
and,
and of various ages and dispositions and whatever.
Yep.
And she basically asks them to go into a comic store, any comic store, I guess it doesn't really matter, pick a comic at, not at random, just pick one that intrigues you or you would be interested in reading.
Okay.
Read it and give us a commentary on it or your thoughts and evaluation. And it's been interesting because, yeah, they're all coming to it fresh. So you see what kind of books do appeal, and some of them aren't surprising. I mean, one girl here has picked up Fables.
Yep.
And Fables always has had that appeal. But, like, see, there's Black Widow here.
Yeah.
And this woman found it, like, the powerful woman thing appealing. And I guess because she's fully dressed made a difference. And it is kind of like an action pose.
Yes.
And they were like, I want to find out more about this character.
Yeah.
What they're about. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
It's interesting that a lot of the books that they pick up have got females on the cover.
That's true, yeah. And some of them, like, say, but this one's quite different. Again, there's a 7-year-old in this one here.
Yes.
And she's picked up what looks like an independent book of C2C. I don't know if
you've heard of it. Set to C by Drew Wang. Yeah, I'm not familiar with it, but that's cool.
But it looks, it's got a bit of a bone thing going on, but apparently it's about, like, a murder, and it's quite dark. And so it's, like, a good thing her parents let her read it.
So there's, these girls or these ladies that pick up these comics kind of say, okay, why did you pick the cover?
That's it, yeah.
The previous exposure, their occupation, their age, where they live, and they pick their favourite panel as well.
Yeah, that's it.
So that's pretty cool. It's actually a good idea. Just, I can imagine marketers and publishers.
This is required reading for marketers and publishers, that's for sure.
And even retailers as well.
Oh, yeah. You know? And, some of them aren't a surprise. Someone bought a True Blood comic and they thought the dialogue was atrocious in it.
Oh, okay. I'm not. Who's that?
What?
Who's Darla?
What?
The dialogue.
Did you say dialogue, sorry.
Oh, they said Darla. I thought that was a character.
I was mumbling probably. I don't know. I'm sorry.
You need to shave your beard there. Your soup straight is getting in the way. This is comicbookresources.com. And then if you just do a search for She Has No Head.
Yeah.
Ladies Comic Project. There's two parts up there now.
Mm.
So it's actually a pretty good idea. Mm. Yeah.
Worth a read.
What's that?
Worth a read. Worth.
I got it.
Yeah.
Who's Darla?
We're still on that, are we? Say that every week to me now.
So that wraps things up like a neat little bow. And, you know, it's Christmas soon.
No, it's not.
It will be. The Christmas decorations are in the shops.
So. Oh, why? Are you guys going to put Christmas decorations up in your shop?
We might do. I know we're doing something Halloween-y.
Cool.
Good.
So,
are you going to have like special horror books on sale?
We've
and
got
stuff?
A few bits and pieces that we're going to put up. And
cool.
Some nice. Cool art things. And
nice.
I want to make some like chains of bats and things like that.
Ah, the little foldy guns.
Yeah.
Cool.
Make some of those. I reckon that would be pretty cool as well. So that would be quite fun.
And I think next week.
Next week will be
we will be discussing our favourite horror.
Yeah.
Projects.
It'll be a Halloween spectacular.
Halloween spectacular with three R's at the end. And I think you'll find some of our choices quite surprising. We've tried to go not traditionally horror books.
We know you've heard of Hellboy. We know you've heard of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
We want to give you some books you might not have heard of
and
force you to read them. And there will be questions afterwards.
Very difficult over the speakers. But
and
yes,
I'll be doing a brief history of horror in comics.
Yes.
Which should be interesting.
It is quite interesting, actually.
Yeah. And yeah, that should be very exciting. And the week after that will be a couple more surprises. We're going back to themed shows, folks.
We are, I think, yeah. We are. What have we got in the coming months? We've got Detective Tales.
Yes.
We're going to do Bounty Hunters.
Yes.
We're going to do Anthropomorphic,
yep,
which is talking animals.
And then then it's wide open after that. So if you have some themes for us, we'll probably do music and comics at some stage.
Yes, that's true. I like the way you did the Wiggles finger movement there.
No one saw that.
Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have any ideas, you can email Chris with a K at extrasequential.com.
That's right. Music for the show is purgeaudit.com. You can check out Quality Comics anytime you like on, was it Hay Street?
Yes. 872.
872, 8th Hay Street, Perth.
You can become a fan of Facebook and everything.
You can as well. And check out what's coming up and see my hilarious comments on there. All the things I put on that try to be funny.
They are truly LOL.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jani, for joining us.
No worries.
It was good to look at someone's face other than Aladdin's. And maybe you could join us again sometime.
Yeah, good.
Fine.
Thanks for listening. You can pick up. You can download or listen to all the previous episodes on extrasequential.com.
Mm-hmm.
Search for us on iTunes or Mixcloud.
We're all over the internet, my friend.
Like a virus. You can't scrub us off.
Like a virus.
Where's that from?
Matrix.
What?
I was Hugo. Oh, Hugo Weaving. Hey! Fine. Whatever.
See you later, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Bye.